You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello and good day, San Jose, and welcome to the Stick Hungry Podcast, your home of the San Jose Sharks on the Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dylan Kayser, and I'm joined by two of my co-hosts today, Producer T and Nick Floor. Boys, how we doing? Hockey's right around the goddamn corner. I'm so pumped. Producer T, I'll start with you. How are you?
Oh, man, I just can't wait to get this season going. I think it's going to be hockey, a shortened season, 56 games. It's going to be hockey all the time from here until... Well, I don't even know when did they schedule playoffs. Probably should have. That's great hockey knowledge there.
Research has been done on this podcast.
You
can really tell.
You know what I mean, though. Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of hockey coming at us quick. It's gonna be good.
Yeah, it is.
I'm excited.
Nick, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. I'm ready. You know, I know hockey's only lasting until May 8th, which is when the regular season ends.
Flexing on me not knowing the game.
That's why we have Nick Floor on this podcast. One guy, at least one of us, knows what the fuck he's talking about.
I'm not gonna lie. Remember, we got that cheat sheet. I got that shit still saved on my phone.
There you go.
Hey, it's about seeing him panic. I'm like, oh fuck, I gotta open up the dock. Hockey's today, boys. For Sharks fans, it was yesterday. Yeah. For people who don't matter, but for us, Thursday.
Today's
we're fucking
day.
Ready. It's not around the corner anymore, Dylan. It's right here. It's in the living room. It's got the popcorn in its lap. It's like, hey, how you doing? Take a seat.
Yeah, it didn't even knock. It just fucking barged right
walked right
room,
on it.
Yeah,
sat on the couch and
Johnny.
Oh man, but yeah, I mean, I'm so excited. We've been bullshitting for I don't know how long about nothing. So,
what's your most looking forward like matchup between this weird Honda division that we got?
You know, it's that's a tough one.
I mean, I'd have to go Vegas, I think, just because of the rivalry. But
yeah, I mean, matchup. You know, I mean, Sharks and another team, not Sharks. Just in general. Yeah, I mean, seeing as we're going to be, I mean, closer to the bottom of the division, I think, you know, matchups against teams like Minnesota, who's also kind of in the middle, I think that's going to be interesting. Yeah. The other California teams, I think those are going to be some good matchups. And Arizona as well, because that Arizona is a team where I feel like they could drop far or they could be in the playoffs. You know, mm-hmm. I don't really know where they sit right now. So I feel like the Sharks might be able to pull off some wins against the Arizona Coyotes. So I'm pretty excited for those.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm most anticipated for the St. Louis matchup because that's like the limit test, right? So on paper, we should get decimated theoretically by the Avs and by Vegas. But St. Louis being that third seeded team, according to most people's predictions, how far have they dropped? Can Binnington bounce back? They don't have Petro. Yeah, they have Torrey Krug. Just really interested to see how that team is and how the Sharks fare against them, because I feel like if you sneak out a couple of wins against St. Louis, maybe the Sharks can contend, you know, be that little seed of doubt in the back of people's minds, as well as Minnesota. Those are my two biggest, I guess, the things I look most forward to, because that's going to be our limit test.
And guys, I mean, I know we gave our predictions and I predicted the San Jose Sharks wouldn't make the playoffs, and I don't necessarily think they are going to make the playoffs, but I think there's a possibility. I think there's a chance. I mean, let's take the Minnesota Wild and the Arizona Coyotes for a second. I think those are probably closer to being playoff teams than we are. But if things go wrong with them, they have some really bad injuries to their squad and they take a step back, I feel like that leaves it open for the San Jose Sharks to maybe squeeze in to that last playoff spot. I think it could happen. I really do.
I think they already have injuries going on in Minnesota right now with Marco Rossi. So,
I mean, I think this is going to be the year of surprises. I know that, like you said, when we did our predictions, we pretty much like had a guaranteed top two and a guaranteed kind of bottom two that, or bottom few that we thought. But even we had Vegas and Colorado locked in the top. I wouldn't be shocked if even if maybe Vegas kind of drops off. You never know with this season coming forward. You know, you go on a little bit of a bad streak and boom, you've lost like seven games. Like
that's
going to make a huge difference.
If you don't have a good first, I'm going to say 15 games to this season, you can almost write it off.
Yeah,
because it's so short.
It's going to be really interesting.
Plus, the biggest thing going into this year, in my opinion, is going to be goalie tandems. Like the entire league has kind of transitioned. I don't know if it's just going to be for this year, but they've transitioned over a tandem, you know, play by committee, keep your guys rested in this shortened season. You know, that makes teams like Vegas a lot more viable because they have Fleury and they have Leonard. You know, the Sharks, they have like 2 1Bs or 2 2As essentially in Dubnyk and Jones, but we get to finally see how they're going to be in this system. Whereas you go to St. Louis, they have Jordan Binnington and they have, okay, that's it.
Yeah, no, that is a great point. And I mean, I really do think these guys are going to push each other. Like I think you're going to see an improved Martin Jones because he knows Devin Dubnyk is right there. He can take his job tomorrow. So I feel like they're going to come out every single game and put it all out. I mean, I don't think Martin Jones is a star goaltender, but I feel like he can improve on last season. And Devin Dubnyk, well, let's see what we got in the guy. I'm interested to see that.
Yeah, I still think it's going to be a 60-40 split for whoever wins the starting job, but we don't know who that is. You know, we saw how they played in the scrimmage game back on the 10th. Neither of them were being subbed out. So we got to see the goals totals there, and we got to see who played well versus who didn't. So, you know, I believe we're still assuming Jones is making the start. I might be wrong. It might be Dubnyk. I would hope that Jones is going to make the start just to see, you know, you want to put your best foot forward. That's where you have your money tied up in, and you expect him to be that 1A. But Dubnyk could easily take over that job.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, I really don't think there's a favorite for the organization right now going into the season. I think they're saying, you know what, Jones had a bad year last year, but let's bring in this guy. We got him on the cheap. Maybe we get a diamond in the rough here with Devin Dubnyk.
Yeah, and the favorite moving forward is actually Alexei Melnichuk. I foresee him taking over this starting job very soon, especially the expansion draft coming up. So
yeah, well, yeah, hopefully in a couple of years we can see this guy really make an impact on the team. Yeah. You Nick, you actually had a great interview with Shang Peng that we got coming up here.
Yeah, I'm excited to see your guys' reactions. It's a great interview. We ask him a lot of pressing questions. We do a full recap chronologically of how the camp went as opposed to how it finished and what we think of the opening night roster for tonight's game. So I'm excited to let you guys listen into this. This was recorded on Wednesday because we had to schedule it with them. Plus, he's going to be there at the game as well, I believe. I hope you guys enjoy what you're going to hear. All right, guys, and joining me today, again, we have Shang Peng from San Jose Hockey Now. Good evening, Shang. How you doing? How's Arizona been treating you?
Pretty good, insofar as I try to stay away as much from Arizona as possible. You know, they call it the hotspot. What do they call it? The hotspot of the coronavirus in the world. So.
Yeah, I mean, we've been listening, and I've been personally watching a lot of your Facebook live streams lately, last couple of days. Again, we're recording this January 13th around 6 o'clock right now. We're getting everything ready. We're going to discuss training camp a little bit, talk about the Sharks hockey, get this season started. But how's it been down there? We know coronavirus is kind of picking up, and like you said, it's the hot spot. You've been wearing the mask, and I've been hearing you on your Facebook live streams. Has it been difficult trying to stay away from people? Is everyone just kind of doing their own thing?
It just depends. I mean, some people obviously are observant of it, but a lot of people are not. And so I just generally try to avoid being inside anywhere. The first time I walked inside anywhere, I've been in Arizona since the 5th, I think. I when I came here, I had to undergo a 5-day quarantine, self-quarantine that was asked of me by the league, I suppose. Anyway, so I had to undergo that, and so after being quarantined, the first time I was inside somewhere was the practice that morning of the last scrimmage on January 10th. And otherwise, I just try to avoid being inside. You know, like I've gotten food, obviously. I haven't been living off cereal, but everything has just been curbside, you know, curbside pickup, DoorDash, delivery, things like that, you know. So I really try to avoid it. And I'm probably, you know, overthinking it in the sense that, look, you know, I'm coming from the Bay Area And Barry is not exactly, you know, doing great with the virus. Nowhere is doing well with the virus, but definitely it's a little less observant here of the safest of protocols, let us say.
Gotcha. And you're actually going to be doing, I mean, it's good for you to be safe because you're going to be doing a lot of traveling here, essentially with the Sharks. You're going to try to cover the majority of the road in whatever they classify as home games this year for San Jose, with slight exceptions to obviously Minnesota and possibly St. Louis, right?
Yeah, Minnesota, St. Louis, and Colorado, those are all, I mean, I can't drive to those places. Mm-hmm. And so I don't feel comfortable personally flying right now. So places that I can drive to, though, Arizona, Vegas, and the Southern California teams, I plan on going to the best of my ability and also safety willing. So hopefully, too, the Sharks make it back to San Jose soon, because I plan to be here in Arizona. But of course, you know, I don't want to be. Nothing against the state, but. My wife is there, so.
Yeah, exactly. You want to be home with the home is where the heart is, type of thing, especially. And you have that tip jar going on still, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and so thank you for mentioning that. So I started a tip jar about a month ago, and the response has been great. Thank you to everybody who's contributed. It's helped pay for most of this trip down here. I plan on traveling even if I don't get the tips, but hopefully people do keep on tipping, so I don't have to dip into my pocket too much. You can just go to San Jose Hockey Now. You can find a tip jar on the right, and 100% of all anything you contribute goes to my travels, and I will be fully transparent with how I spend your money. Just ask me. It's not something that I'm going to write a post about, but if you just ask me how I'm spending your money, you know, then I will definitely tell you. I'll tell you every expense and, you know, I'm in an Airbnb, and I've been in an Airbnb it's going to be 12 days when I leave Arizona, because like I mentioned, I had a 5-day quarantine. And, you know, I got the cheapest Airbnb that I could find that also had a private entrance, because obviously that's important if you're in quarantine. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an example of what I'm spending the money on. You know, like some people, when they tip me, they're nice enough to say like, oh, grab a beer on me or, you know, or whatnot. And I appreciate that thought, but that's not right. The point of the tip jar is to get to and from places. And so just know that fully that this trip, you know, the 12 hours that I drove from the Bay Area, from San Francisco to Phoenix, and this 12-day stay in this Airbnb, all the tip jar contributions have gone directly into that, and I really, really appreciate it. And I will continue pressing on, hopefully too, through the playoffs too. Hopefully there are playoffs for the Sharks.
Yeah, let's hope so. You know, I think I'd speak for majority of us Sharks fans that may have contributed to the tip jar when I say that, you know, you may have started in a rough spot in our hearts coming from the Golden Knights. You know, we talked about that last time and being a Kings fan. But I would have to say that I feel like the majority of the reason why we contribute to that tip jar and to essentially your fund is because of the fact that you bring us unbiased journalism, that you bring us as Sharks fans, me personally getting to know you last year through your reports. You know, you give us, like I said before, the good news and we're happy about it. You give us objective views and unbiased, like the bad news, but you break it to us to where we understand it, and we understand that it's your job. So I feel like that's the main reason why plenty of people have, you know, poured their support into the tip jar necessarily, and I hope it continues throughout the year. So, excuse me, before we dive essentially into the training camp recap that I kind of wanted to do with you, I wanted to get your opinion on something that the boys and I have kind of talked about and touched on that was a little bit, I don't want to say peculiar, but blah, 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 peculiar, but that's the only way that I can really put it, is we've seen the free agent market tend to be like a team's market, essentially, to where they don't have to fork over large size contracts.
Sure.
Like PTO for Mike Hoffman for the St. Louis Blues. And I believe he signed for $4 million for 1 year. Mm-hmm. And then the Taylor Hall contract as well.
I mean, every contract, I mean, out there, even for the Sharks, small contracts like Matt Nieto. Mm-hmm. Matt Nieto was making $2 million last year, and Matt Nieto did not have a bad year last year.
Not at all.
Matt Nieto should be making $3-4 million. No one's saying that, but for him to basically, well, not basically, he's taking the minimum. Mm-hmm. And anyway.
Yeah. Why do you think, using that as an example, why don't you think the Sharks took any shots on some bigger names in the free agent market to try to really bolster up this, the team that essentially has two very well operative lines, and the third and fourth line are a bit of a crapshoot from what we know, and essentially opt back into working with the youth that didn't necessarily work last year?
Well, yeah, I've thought a lot about this, and I've written a lot about it in the last month. And when free agency first started, I was very patient. You know, there were a lot of course, impatient fans. And I thought, well, you know, there's still a lot of free agents out there. And, you know, give Doug Wilson time. And don't jump on him on October 9th when you wait 2 months and there's still going to be a lot of guys available potentially. And that is sort of what happened in terms of there were a lot of guys potentially available when the NHL and NHLPA agreed fully to restart this season. And the Sharks still didn't get anybody. And so it was baffling to me. Mm-hmm. And so the best that I could figure, because we've asked Doug if he has the green light to spend to the cap. And according to Doug, he does have it from Hassel Plattner. And not that he's already close to it anyway. I think even without signing anybody, he was already at about $3 million away from the cap. So he was pretty close to the ceiling of it anyway. But so that's not the reason why. It doesn't appear to be ownership thing. I do believe the Sharks want to win. I don't really subscribe to the self tank, that sort of thing that people are talking about. I do understand that Doug is prioritizing his draft picks now, so it's not all in right now, and I get that too. You know, there's a way that you can win and sign free agents and not go all in, and that way was this offseason where you can sign guys for 1 year, pretty good players. Eric Haula, Connor Sheary just went, Anthony Duclair. I'm not saying that these guys are all perfect for the Sharks, but somewhere in this pile of free agents, you would think that there's somebody that could help the Sharks out and their forward group that would have come for a year and cheap. And that's the perfect kind of contract to sign if you don't want to commit too much. And, you know, if this player is good, let's say you sign a Connor Sheary and he's good for you and the team is bad, then you trade him at the deadline and you get a draft pick back. And if Connor Sheary is bad, then it's just 1 year. And so it's, you know, it's not much loss. So anyway, why with, you know, this kind of thinking, why did the Sharks choose the course that they did? And the best I can come up with is that the Sharks really, really like their young players. And even though a lot of these players are the same young prospects that failed the Sharks, you know, frankly, last year, and actually not to blame them. I mean, I think they were put in positions where it wasn't fair for them to expect a Leon Bergman or a Daniil Yrtykin and so on to take high leverage roles in the NHL immediately. Mm-hmm. So they were put in unfair positions and they didn't succeed. And I think the thinking is that it's another year and players can grow a lot in a year. And we might be seeing it with a Noel Gregor. You know, there's a lot of hope placed that Gregor can take that third line center job, and there's hope of guys like that. Chmielewski has had a very good camp, and he appears like he will start the season on the taxi squad, which is, you know, it's not quite making the team, but it's you know, he could have just been sent down to the Barracuda. He's still waiver exempt, so it looks like he's had some growth. And so I think that's their belief that rolling with the guys that they have is going to be better than, you know, signing a couple guys, you know, a couple of averages, slightly above average players.
Yeah. And going back to Sasha Chmielewski, he had a pretty injury riddled season last year. And prior to that season, he performed decently well for a guy who was drafted in his position. And I'm really interested to see based off the reports that you actually gave about Bob Bugner kind of praising him at camp, I'm really interested to see where he takes, you know, that next step. If he's able to stay healthy, if he gets the call-ups from the taxi squad and then is able to perform, I'm really interested to see how that is essentially going to work for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, going into the camp this year, there was a lot of question marks. And I still want to say that there is. We have a little bit more clarity in the situation of third line center, like you mentioned with Noah Gregor, as well as some other different line combinations. But the only thing that was really secure was the top five and Patrick Marleau, because he wants to break that record, you know. So we had Couture, Meyer, LeBanc, Kane, and Hurdle with that last right winger spot essentially up for grabs, and it was presumably going to Donato, and then things kind of changed throughout the camp.
John Leonard emerged, and hopefully this is not a repeat of last year's situation with some of the prospects that we talked about that didn't quite pan out last year. But if John Leonard does pan out, though, you know, a lot of people are wondering about Donato. Well, how come Donato didn't secure the top six role? Oh, you know, he's a bottom six player. I don't look at it that way. If Leonard pans out, that's exactly what you want out of your team. You want more balance. You want more good players. And so if Leonard, you know, coming right out of college as a 22-year-old with not without the greatest of pedigrees in terms of not the highest, you know, draft, you think he was a fourth round pick. Or actually, maybe even lower. Actually, I don't quite remember that right now. But anyway, though, he's not a guy that comes in with a ton of fanfare. But if he really has developed, then suddenly you have two top nine quality forwards in Leonard and Donato that you didn't have last year, and that you can add on top of the top five. And maybe Gregor can fill that role too, and be another one of those guys too. So, you know, we're still in training camp. We haven't started regular season yet, so we're all in kind of hope and hype mode. But this is a good thing for the Sharks if somebody is better than a Leonard and better than a Donato and can push Donato down a little bit, and that makes your entire lineup more balanced and deeper.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to say, or it doesn't necessarily say that Donato had a bad camp. Maybe John Leonard just had that good of a camp that he got the opportunity to thrive on that Kane and Hurdle line, which it in turn ended up happening. And he scored he scored at least one goal in one of the scrimmages. He was kind of posted in front. Of course, it's not game speed. You want to take him how you can get him type of thing. But it goes, in my opinion, it shows more towards how John Leonard's work ethic has been, as opposed to Donato having a quote unquote bad camp, which I've seen kind of get thrown around other places. But yeah, for a sixth round pick, if we could get John Leonard to come up and play that right wing role, I mean, like you said, it's nothing but good things for the team, because the deeper you are and the better you are throughout the lineup, the more success you're going to have as a team.
Right. And then the other calculation too is that it's actually possible that Donato had we didn't get to see any of this until, you know, I was the only reporter here, and I didn't make it here until the last scrimmage. So so we didn't get to see any of this. This is all from the coaches. It's actually possible that Donato actually had a better camp than Leonard. But if you think about it, if let's say Donato had an A-minus camp and Leonard had a B-plus camp. But then if you think, though, like, let's put this rookie with more experienced, better players, and they can help him. They can help shield and protect him in some places. And let's put the better player down a line where that line needs to be bolstered by a more experienced player. Then, you know, then it kind of makes sense there, too. So it's not necessarily saying that Leonard even outplayed Donato in camp. I don't know. I don't think that's really been necessarily the case. I think it's more that Leonard was way better than maybe people expected, and good enough where he can start to think like, oh, he can play higher in the lineup maybe, so let's try him. And if he's good, then this helps our whole team out. And again, if you're going to start a rookie out, it makes sense to start him out in a place where, you know, he's playing with Tommy Hurdle, you know, an all-star, Evander Kane, you know, a six-time 20-goal scorer, as opposed to, you know, playing with Noel Gregor and Matt Nieto, who, you know, are skilled and talented players in their own right, but they don't have that kind of, level of accomplishment.
Yeah, I completely understand. So you're essentially saying we're going to get Jonathan Chichu type production out of John Leonard this year.
Well, someone tweeted that out to me, and that was a nice little callback. But then I reminded the reader that Chichu in his first year, I think scored 9 goals. He was pretty unexceptional, at least in terms of production. He obviously showed flashes, but he scored 9 goals in his rookie year. And then the next year, I think he went up to like 28 or 29, and then Joe Thornton came. So of course it'd be nice if Leonard charts that path and wins a Rocket Richard in what, 3 years. But that first year for Chichu, though, if Leonard's a 9 goal scorer, even in a 56 game season, that might be a little bit lower than what you want out of that spot. So,
gotcha. So speaking of like breakout players that kind of showed up for the offensive side of the puck, essentially, we touched a little bit on Noah Gregor and how he's kind of, last year he was kind of given an unfair hand in a sense, where he was thrown up and down the lineup, called up, called down. It was just a whole mess for him. Now he's finding some stability essentially on this team, cementing himself from what we've seen so far in the reports coming out of camp as that third line center. Do you think that's like a more complementary role to how he plays?
I'm not sure if that's necessarily about how he plays. I think it's more to do with what the Sharks really want and need out of that third line center role, and they want a little more offensive upside. You know, there was, you know, when we were looking at this group of players at the beginning of camp, right? You know, who is going to be your third line center? The most accomplished center in that group might have been, you know, Joel Schellman. And that's not a guy that should be a third line player. And so I don't think the Sharks wanted to start the season with a guy that really does not belong up in a lineup, you know, good solid player, but does not belong up in a lineup like that. And so they wanted somebody to emerge and take that job, you know, somebody with a little more offensive upside. They also have emphasized that they wanted more speed out of their bottom six. So a guy like Gregor, and, you know, Gambrell was also in the mix too. But Gregor can be, you know, we don't know yet, but he might be a very smart stroke, I guess, by the coach here in terms of giving Gregor that job. Because, you know, last year Gregor played mostly wing in San Jose, actually in with the Sharks entirely at wing. He did play center with the Barracuda, but we weren't really thinking of him as a centerman. We were thinking of him more as a winger. And so they, the front office and the coaching staff, they were more imaginative than us in the media, as they should be. That's their job. So they're giving this guy Noah Gregor, who we saw last year, he has loads of speed. And he says that he's faster now, which is, you know, very promising and very possible. He's very young. I think he's 22. He definitely has a more offensive upside. You know, I've talked to multiple scouts that think that maybe not this year, but long term, he's got 20 goal potential. And defensively, he seems pretty solid. You know, I've talked to guys who like that part of his game. And also, you know, I talked to Justin Froese of Future Considerations, who watched him in the WHL quite a bit. I didn't see him so much back then. And that's when he played a lot of center. And he said that the defensive details of the game even back then were a strong suit for Gregor. So that side should be okay. I think the one question with Gregor, and probably part of the reason why he got moved to wing last year, is that he hasn't shown, even back to his Prince Albert days, that he's a particularly strong faceoff man. He's always had pretty, well, below average percentages in that department. And so I think that's one big question mark for him in terms of, can he secure this third line center job? But I think, though, you know, this is kind of a potential ceiling play by the coaching staff. You know, a guy like Joel Schellman as your third line center, well, you know what he can offer you: good defensive play, you know, detail oriented. He's always going to be in the right place. But is he going to add any offense? Is he going to surprise you with anything? Probably not. A guy like Gregor, maybe he can. And I think that's what they're hoping for, that this is Gregor's year. You know, this is the year that he makes the leap, and we will see.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good kind of thought process going into this year for almost anybody, even the top end guys. Is there was career lows for almost everyone across the board last year, which is why the Sharks fell as far and as fast as they did. I feel like the Sharks, Doug Wilson and Bob Bugner, are expecting players to take that next step. Players like Timo Meier specifically. He's got the analytics to kind of back essentially how he plays, but they're still waiting on him to just take that next step to be at that level that everyone believes he could play at. And so talking about the younger guys taking the next step, someone who, I mean, in my opinion, who hasn't really shown the ability to necessarily take that next step in their gameplay has been Dylan Gambrell, whereas others around him have shown to improve, not immensely, but even enough, essentially, like the Noah Gregor, like you said, where they see enough of him to where they feel like this could be a ceiling play at third line center for him. Whereas Gambrell, you don't really hear so much about him from Bob Bugner, and you kind of see where he's kind of falling in the depth charts, where he was a second round pick. So how much longer do you think Dylan Gambrell is going to essentially, or how much shorter of a leash, I guess, how long of a leash is he going to get coming from the coaching staff, you know, bringing in Rocky Thompson and John Madden as well? Is he essentially moving more towards the fourth line? Do you think he's going to get mixed into the third? Where do you think things are going to go with Dylan on this one?
Well, immediately, he's not going to play tomorrow night, probably. The fourth line the last couple of days has been Marlowe, Shellman, and Sorensen, and Gambrell and Nason are your extras. So right now, he's not going to play. And so he's already been moved down kind of from like a possibility at third line center to an extra. But I think with Gambrell, too, we need to... You know, kind of, it's hard to, but we have to kind of forget his draft position, you know, like, yeah, he's a second round pick. Second round picks are expected to do a bit more. Okay. You know, like he may not do that. He can still be a good player, good, useful player. You know, he is the kind of guy who he's a good penalty killer. He also is the kind of guy that does a lot of things kind of, you know, okay to well. But, you know, maybe he's not particularly great at one area, and there's nothing wrong with that. That can still be a very useful player. So I think that's one thing I would caution. Let's focus on where he's at now. And so anyway, in terms of where he's at now, how he can help, one of the things that he does have is versatility, and Bob has talked about it extensively. He can play center. He can play wing. He is, in fact, the Sharks' only right-handed centerman. And actually, he could be the only right-handed forward. So
is John Leonard right-handed? I'm not sure.
No, exactly. I believe Leonard's left-handed. Yeah, actually, yeah, I don't always remember the these
yeah, I know LeBanc for a fact is right-handed, and that's about it.
Right. So actually, it's the other way around then. So if Gambrell goes, then that will leave. I'm sorry. Nason is right-handed too, but. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so he's the only right-handed centerman, but his position is in danger, though. You know, the Sharks claimed Rudolf Balzers yesterday, a former Sharks prospect that they still like, and they liked enough to claim him on waivers. Gambrell is not waiver exempt. And so even though Gambrell will make the team tomorrow, he'll be in the top 14 forwards. When Balzers clears quarantine, Balzers doesn't count against the roster because he's you know dealing with visa. He's not here yet, basically, you know, and it'll be a couple of weeks before he's here because he'll have 2 weeks of quarantine once he gets into Sharks, you know, Sharks territory,
wherever that may be.
Yeah, wherever that is, right? Exactly. But yeah, so it's gonna be a while, but it's gonna be in this stretch of time that Gambrell will need to show that they need to keep him over the other forwards because Balzers is, you know, they're bringing him in to get another shot. They're not bringing him in so they can waive him again. And so when Balzers arrives in, you know, 3 weeks or whenever it is, one of these 14 forwards is likely to go. And, you know, other things can happen that can take care of this quote-unquote problem, you know, injuries and whatnot, right? But if everybody stays healthy, then one of these 14 will need to go. And if you look at this list, Your most likely candidate is probably Gambrell right now, even though he's not waiver exempt. Shellman is waiver exempt, so I guess he's a possibility, but he seems very clearly to be a Bob Bugner favorite. John Leonard, you know, John Leonard doesn't pan out immediately. You can just send him down without an issue. And then Nason, even though Nason is going to be a healthy scratch tomorrow night, probably, you know, he seems like he made a good impression on everybody last year. So I don't know if they'll be so quick to let him go. And so when Balzers comes, then who goes is the question.
Yeah, who gets the axe in the event that the Sharks retain a trade piece from the Erik Karlsson trade a few years ago? That's just writing it down right now. That's something that I definitely is going to require some attention. It drives competition, and competition is nothing but positive. You know, you could look at the Devin Dubnyk acquisition as well. I mean,
right.
In the event that he actually drives competition with Martin Jones, it can light the figurative fire under Jones's tuchus to allow him to get up to that, I don't want to say elite level, but at least average, league average goaltending, above .900 save percentage.
Right. It'll be interesting. Like I said, these upcoming few weeks before Balzers arrives, all these names I mentioned, Gambrell, Nason, Shellman, you can throw in Sorensen in there too. You know, they're going to need to show that they need to be in an NHL. And we'll see if they do.
I feel like Sorensen has the comeback player of the year, not necessarily of the year type of thing, but he's got that kind of aura around him right now. He went back over to Sweden and played a little bit over there, kind of tore it up, which he's inevitably supposed to do. But he's kind of lost in the mix. A lot of people forget that he's even on the team anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Yeah, I was looking at some of the forwards at the bottom six, and except for Marlowe, Sorensen is actually the only person that scored more than 15 goals in a season in this whole group. Nieto, Gregor, Nason, Gambrell, you need this whole list, right? And obviously Marlowe has scored a lot of goals, but Marlowe isn't that same Marlowe anymore. So Sorensen is actually the most recently kind of accomplished guy in some ways on this list. You know, he scored 17 goals at Joe Thornton's side a couple of years ago. So it's very reasonable that Sorensen can have a comeback season. And if he does, then that is, that starts to kind of, we're buying into training camp and all the wishful thinking and everybody's going to have a good season and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But if Sorensen does have that comeback, then you start to see, this team actually build some depth out at forward, assuming too that, of course, the third line works out.
Yeah, it sort of sends a trickle-down effect. If Sorensen is producing, he drives competition higher because he could take someone's role. And if you have a guy like Nieto who has to essentially go down to the fourth line because Sorensen's doing well, or maybe he gets rotated up and he clicks well with Gregor and Donato on that third line, you could see essentially a shift in where people are going as far as, like we talked about, bottom six and the pairings there. And the more competition, the higher the goal scoring or the point totals, the better this team's going to be overall.
Right. So Sorensen is a guy with some potential. And so I wouldn't be so quick to kind of write him off like many fans have been, because there is a little track record there. A guy like Sorensen has, in my opinion, more potential to help you than, say, a Nason or a Gambrell. I mean, that's just my opinion, but...
His penalty killing, after the Barkley-Goodrow trade, because Melker Karlsson and Barkley-Goodrow were one of the two main penalty killers on the team. So seeing him step up and do more penalty killing in place of those guys just adds essentially his skill set, his tools, which could make him more valuable. I could see Sorensen and Nieto, pairing together with a Vlasic and a Ferraro to help keep that penalty kill essentially where it was last year among the top in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, with those guys, though, they'll need a guy to take face-offs, though. So they might be split up a bit. Bob talked about that. But then, on the fly, though, they could be. Nieto and Sorensen actually might be the Sharks' best pure penalty killers among the forwards. So, yeah, absolutely right.
So kind of shifting, we've talked about offense enough, right? We're hoping for offense for the Sharks. At least us fans are. It's easier writing for you, right? Because you just, this guy got a goal, this guy got a goal. You know, you get to, you have more stuff to talk about.
I want offense because a playoff team is good for business. So.
Yeah, exactly. The further they play into the year, the more you get to write about and the more you get to report on. So
yep.
Shifting over to defense, a lot of people kind of came into the camp with a preset setup in their head. It was essentially Burns, Šimek, Vlasic, Karlsson, Ferraro, and a big question mark. And there were names that could be thrown in there left and right, starting with Middleton to Pastrnak to even Ryan Merkley. You know, I was a co-captain of the Merkley for 6D man team. Doesn't look like that's turning out too well. But there were a couple of surprises in the camp. And the first one I want to kind of get started with and just discussing was, what is going on with Radim Šimek?
Yeah, the good news is that Šimek is skating, and he's skated for the last 3 days or so, and he had an MRI, and Bugner said that it didn't reveal any structural damage, you know. So Šimek is going through pain and swelling, but there's nothing structurally wrong with his knee, apparently. So this is good. Šimek will miss the first two games in Arizona. Bugner hopes that he will be ready for the next set of games, which is in St. Louis. But I what is alarming about the Šimek news is that it does seem like every day it's just a further kind of pushback of the day before. You know, like the first day we got the news, it's like, oh, he'll skate tomorrow. Yeah, we gave him the day off. He'll be in a scrimmage. Oh, you know, we decided to give him the scrimmage off, you know, things like that. And I don't know if this is intentional by the Sharks to kind of obscure what's going on. But definitely though, it's, if you're counting on him as a Sharks fan or as just the Sharks themselves, to be in your top four or even your bottom pairing defenseman, there is definitely a lot of troubling signs here. And so we'll see. You know, good news is that again he is still skating, and so hopefully that pain and that swelling subsides and he can start to feel right. Because you know, if you look back on, I think it was day four of training camp that we talked to him, he seemed
bothered.
Yeah, by what was going on. You know, he just talked about how he thought that this knee trouble was over and it came back over the summer. And he's trying his best out there, but he's not sure, you know, how to, like, you know, be at his best. And, you know, it seemed like there was a real mental weight, related to his injury besides the actual physical part. And so hopefully he can get right and go back, you know, start to get back to the Radim Šimek that we remember a couple of years ago. But that is an open question mark right now for sure.
Yeah. So with the absence and him essentially being taken out of the lineup during practices and warmups, like you had said, with the obscure lower body injury or day to day, whatever they want to say, it seemed like Ferraro kind of stepped up and went to that. I don't know if that's technically the top line with Burns, because it's very vague. I want to say healthy Karlsson, healthy Vlasic is technically a number one line for defense. But Ferraro stepping up into that role as being like the Wookiee tamer, essentially, and playing good defense alongside Brent Burns. So we got to see that happen. All that does is further drive ambiguity essentially with like that third pairing. Who's going to be that third pairing? I thought it would help Ryan Merkley's case. And then out of left field, Mr. 20 pounds of muscle extra, Nikolai Knyazov decides to show up, and boy, did he show up.
Yeah. And I want to add a note about Ferraro too. You know, one of the big pieces of news that Bob gave us really early in camp, but now I think that it may have been related with Šimek having trouble, was, I think, day two, Bob was talking Ferraro up as a top four defenseman already in his second year. And I don't think it's a coincidence that 2 days later, you know, Redeem Šimek was made available to us, and Šimek's, you know, was talking about his knee trouble. So I think the jury is out. And I have heard great reports about Ferraro, not just from Buchner, but from other players and whatnot. So, but it's still Sharks adjacent. So I think we need to take that with a grain of salt until we actually see these guys in action. But yeah, I'm curious to see how much Ferraro really has taken the leap this year, if he really has become a true top four defenseman over the off season. Possible, but we need to see it before we make up our mind on that. Regarding Merkley and Knyazov. So Knyazov is a guy they signed from the KHL last year. Very little fanfare. I talked to guys in Russia. They didn't really like him much either. But this is a guy that got to give credit to the Sharks staff, just insofar as they found a guy with some good raw talent that maybe hadn't played a lot of big minutes in places, you know, where he was playing before. Even last year with the Barracuda, for most of the first half of the season, he was a bottom pairing guy for a not very good Barracuda team. And he didn't really stand out when I watched him. But in the second half, though, he did start to play more. He mentioned that himself a couple days ago when we talked to him. And I way back in February, I was talking to scouts, to a scout who liked him. You know, I didn't even bring him up because I didn't know if he was even a real prospect. You know, I thought he was kind of a non-entity. And this scout talked about, yeah, I like his tools a lot. You know, he's raw, but I like his tools. And so it appears that, he's come with the offseason. He went into the offseason. He gained, a lot of muscle, like he said, 20 pounds. He hasn't lost any of his skating. Buchner says he has unbelievable feet. So he moves well for a big man. And while there isn't a lot of offensive upside in there, you know, as long as he can make that first pass and he can defend well, then he has a chance, with his physical tools to make it in the league. But again, though, you know, he played 3 games last year. I think he played about 10 minutes a night. So there's not a lot of NHL experience there. And so it's going to be a learning curve to deal with the speed and skill of the league. And so we'll see if he can step in and do that immediately. I think that's a huge question mark if he can do that immediately. But tomorrow night, no matter what, the Sharks will be starting, since Šimek is out, they look like they'll be starting either Knyazov or Nicholas Meloche. So one of two guys combined with 3 combined NHL games between them. So
yeah, and their pairing is that supposed to be Middleton? That's almost like a shoe-in for that spot, or is that
Pastrnak? I would think so. Oh no, yeah, it's I don't think I don't think it's Pastrnak. That was our presumed sixth defenseman or bottom pairing guy, and there were a lot of good reports on him. But yesterday he started with he came on as an extra yesterday, and yesterday he was with the taxi squad. And I asked Bob, basically yesterday, just like a typical day, you have your regular team and then the healthy scratches come out, right? That's typical morning skate. The 18 guys who are going to play, skate, and then your healthy scratches come out afterwards, right? So it worked the same way yesterday where when practice started, it was the 23-man roster. So Nason and Gambrell were included. And when those guys were done, a few skaters filtered in. And this is your presumed taxi squad. It was Handemark, it was Chmielewski, and it was Pastrnak. And so let's not forget, though, the taxi squad can be a very flexible thing, especially for these guys that are waiver exempt. So Pastrnak can play with the Sharks at really any point. He can miss the opening night and then play the next game, no problem. He's in Arizona with them. There's no he's got to fly from wherever to get over here. So he can make his Sharks debut as soon as game 2, but it doesn't look like it'll be tomorrow. And so tomorrow, I would guess that Middleton, having that a little bit more experience, he probably gets a start, and probably Knyazov. And they've been paired together the last two or I couldn't tell in today's practice, but yesterday's practice they were paired together. and Šimek was with Miloš. And Miloš, and since Šimek is going to be out, you know, Miloš is probably going to be your seventh demon, or just they just put him right in a taxi squad. And so yeah, so I think it'll be Middleton and Knyazov tomorrow, which is, yeah, it's a pair with a lot of questions, but we'll see.
we just need him to play defense. Like, that's all we need from him. We have enough offensive defensemen on this roster to feed a whole family's worth. You know, I see minimal game time essentially in their future. I don't want to put it at like that type of way, but it's kind of notorious in that system where Middleton will probably be around, I want to say like maybe 13 to 15 minutes of time on ice with his partner averaging around the same, with the Sharks possibly dropping down to like the 5D man with the rotation sort of system that they've run before. Now things could be different with the Bugner system. Of course, a lot of this flows with game script as well. But you mentioned a couple names, and I know we were talking about defense, but you mentioned two names that I have been high on myself. One I've been kind of let down by, and the other one I still have a lot of hope for. Mm-hmm. Again, I say this without any games being played, so what am I even talking about? But Frederik Hanmark, who signed that 1-year deal to come over, and I have heard little to nothing about him at all, like essentially being on the taxi squad, and I think I'm not sure if he's waiver exempt to where they could bring him. He is? Okay. So they can kind of bring him up and down from taxi squad to the fourth line, where I presumed he would essentially take hold of was that fourth line center position, as well as Sasha Chmielewski, who you said earlier is waiver exempt. So he could also kind of come in and out. Do you see that taxi squad rotation being like a regular thing where the Sharks are essentially trying out certain guys if they're more numbers in the loss columns essentially as opposed to the wins, whereas if they find like a good streak of players, they're going to stick to them? Do you see like a nice revolving door down there at the fourth line with those guys?
Oh yeah, I do think so. You know, when training camp started, I wasn't really sure how they were going to approach the taxi squad. You know, I thought that they might go with a more like NHL experienced group, the guys that they sent down to the Barracuda yesterday, guys like Carrick, Claussen, Suomela, Gabriel, guys that have legitimate NHL experience. I thought that they might go more in that kind of range, but they went the other way. They went with a lot of younger players that a lot of them don't have any NHL experience. You know, guys like VL, Chmielewski, and I think guys that showed in camp, guys who had better camps. I think guys were rewarded here for having stronger camps. And so there were a couple of surprise names, obviously, like a VL, Miloš. I don't think anybody expected those guys to have gotten this far, and credit to them for having done so. And so I think Hanmark, speaking specifically of Hanmark, since you asked about him, I would have thought that at the beginning of training camp, if you asked me who is the Sharks' third line center going to end up being, I would have guessed him, actually. Just because he came from Europe with a little more fanfare. You know, a lot of scouts, a lot of people I talked to who have seen him in Sweden, like him more than Shellman. They actually think they don't think Hanmark is a 3C in the NHL. That's not what they were saying, but that they thought that he should be a better fourth line center than Shellman. So I figured with the Sharks' kind of weakness up the middle, that Hanmark would kind of emerge and just be the best candidate for that role, even if he's not suited for it. And at worst, like you said, probably push Shellman out of a 4C if they figured out another third line center. But that is not what's happened at camp. I think a couple things come into that. Bob really likes Shellman. He's been consistent in his praise of Shellman for the last couple of seasons. Things he always says about Shellman is that Shellman is always in the right place. Coaches love that, and that's important. I don't say that to make fun. Like, that's important to win hockey games, even if the average viewer, you know, we can't always see, you know, that matters. But it matters to be in the place you're supposed to be, and Shellman is consistently in that right place. Shellman also is, according to Bugner, he called him a gamer, which in hockey speak is a huge compliment. And so Those are points in Shellman's favor. I think another thing in Shellman's favor too is that Shellman is quicker quicker than Hendemark. You know, Hendemark's big question marks when he came over. You know, he's a big, strong, defensively aware centerman, great at faceoffs. But even back in Sweden, you know, people were saying, yeah, I'm not sure, you know, pace is going to be an issue with him. He's also not a, a quick skater. You know, he does okay when he gets going, but, you know, he's not a fast guy by any stretch. And one thing that, that Bugner has said from the beginning of training camp is that I want a faster bottom six. You know, I he wants a bottom six that can be fast and play fast. And that is not Hendemark's forte. The one time we did speak with Hendemark at training camp was really early on in day two or three. And I asked him, you know, what's his adjustment been like to North American NHL-like hockey at this training camp? And the two things he said was, yeah, it's really fast and I'm getting used to the pace of it. And so that, you know, kind of corroborates everything that I've seen and everything that's been told to me by my sources. And so I think that Hendemark's the kind of guy that I can see him figuring out how to deal with the faster pace, but just needs some time. So it still wouldn't surprise me if he emerged and, you know, became a guy that could help out the Sharks, maybe push out Shulman, you know, for a little bit too, possibly, right? But I think though that with what Bob wants. You know, think about a Gregor as being that model for the bottom six that Bob wants, right? You know, Hendemark doesn't quite fit into that immediately. You know, Hendemark will have to think his way, you know, process the game fast enough to do that. He's not going to do that with his feet. You know, Hendemark's not going to get much faster at this level. So Hendemark's, you know, hockey brain will have to do a lot of that. You know, we'll have to play fast for him if he can't skate fast. And that is possible. You know, you don't have to skate fast to play fast. And so we'll see if Hendemark can make that adjustment. I think it's a plus that Hendemark did make it to the taxi squad. If you're a fan or if you like him. We'll see if he can kind of grow from that role. They could have just sent him down to the Barracuda though. So I think that he had a good enough camp where they see that he's pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with the speed and scoring has been the underlying tone of this training camp from Bob Bugner himself. And Frederik Hendemark might have to learn a little bit from Shulman to try to take over his job and being at the right place at the right time, essentially. Like you said, his feet aren't going to make it for him. So he's going to have to think faster in order to play at this level. Just a phenomenal kind of recap with you as far as this training camp goes. We're heading into the regular season now. We get to finally see what the hype is or isn't all about, if the Sharks can prove the doubters wrong. So just kind of looking forward into the year, you know, as people are listening to this, it's already Thursday. Sharks hockey is back. They're getting ready to listen to this podcast to then go on and watch what we're talking about unfold in a, you know, game speed. What do you think Sharks fans should reasonably expect from this team this year that they didn't necessarily get last year?
It's going to be a faster team. I mean, just changing out from Joe Thornton, great as he is, was, but he's not the, I mean, Joe Thornton's a great example of playing fast with your brain, but definitely not with your feet. And so They're going to be a lot faster to the eye, you know, just having Noel Gregor take Joe Thornton's spot as third line center. Just that will do it for you. But also, too, you know, Marlo Sorensen at your wings and Donato Nieto is a very fast player, too. So it's going to be a faster Sharks team to the eye. They've been preaching, you know, better defense, better team defense. They absolutely need it, too, to protect Jones and Dubnyk. And so we'll see if we get that, too. And hopefully, we get a kind of a reinvigorated Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns, because, you know, those guys can change the season either way, right? The pendulum either way for the Sharks.
Yeah, I've always referred to as Brent Burns as the double-edged sword for the Sharks. It feels like he is either attacking the opponents or sometimes his aggressiveness can be costly and lead to two-on-one. So I'm really interested to see how the 10 plus months of rest for the San Jose Sharks have allowed these guys to get their feet back under them after so many years of going deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, the bodies were healthy. Burns, though, that like, he's gonna play the same style. He's still gonna play aggressive style. He's like, there's gonna be things that happen where he pinches. Maybe the forward wasn't quick enough, or maybe Burns didn't give that forward enough time to figure out that said forward had to cover for Burns. So there's gonna be two on ones coming back the same way. That's going to happen. So that's not going to change. So if you're hoping that changes with this new, more defensive system, that's not going to happen. Part of the offensive system is that they want Erik Karlsson, Brent Burns, and actually all the defensemen to be attacking below the tops of the circles more. So be more aggressive in offensive zone. But the question with Burns is that, last year, right, the payoff for his aggressiveness to the payoff to the times that the Sharks were getting burnt wasn't as in previous years, in his Norris years, right, mistakes were made too. He was still the same aggressive Brent Burns, but overall the value was heavily weighed that it was a positive, at least in my opinion, in previous years. Last year, not so much. So hopefully this year that balance, goes way more into the positive side with his aggressiveness.
Yeah, it's reflected in his point total as well. He was just above. He was 83 points, 82 games a couple seasons ago. Actually, I think he was a Norris Trophy finalist, and I think Mark Giordano actually won that one. excuse me. So with that... again, I don't expect the style of Brent Burns to change at all. I expect more defensive accountability from the forwards in that zone, where when he's pinching down, there is a forward that is responsible for helping keep the back end essentially together. But with that new style of offense that's kind of being implemented in the Bob Bugner regime, where he's talked about overall team defense needs to be better, but defensive... The defensemen essentially are going to be more aggressive in the system. They're going to be rotating down. Like you said, they're going to be pinching. They're going to be roaming. With this new system, this new style, is there a bold prediction that you kind of have out there that you've kind of been holding on to and you haven't really floated it out there? Is there something that you're like, you know what? I bet Timo Meier pots like 40 goals this year or something like that.
No, I hate to disappoint you, but I don't have anything in that department, because I have as many questions about this team as anybody else. I haven't been able to see them at all in camp, as all of us haven't really been able to. And I don't like buying into preseason hype. Even before I covered the Sharks, I remember talking to people about Antti Suomela, because I just was curious, because I was covering the Golden Knights that year, and I was curious about this Finnish kid in the preseason, was tearing it up. And I was like, oh, is this guy legit, And I was hearing, rave reports from a lot of people, And, look what happened with Antti, and so I need to see this before I make any predictions. If I watch one game, come back to me after I watch one game, and I might be able to give you a prediction then, because I might be able to see in one game if Gregor has really taken that leap. I can't see it from a scrimmage where, he's playing, other Sharks. But I can see it, though, if he's matched up against, a Nick Bonino or something like that, or something, another good centerman of, the third line kind of area. So I can't give you that, unfortunately. I need to see these guys in action a little more. I have a lot of questions, a lot of doubts. The one thing I will say, though, that it just sort of occurred to me when we were talking about this new style of offense, though, is that I think it makes sense, too, why they wanted to add more speed, not just offensively, but defensively, too. So if you have a Burns and Karlsson attacking down low, and then something, like there's a turnover or something happens, right? Who do you want backchecking? Do you want Noel Gregor backchecking or Joe Thornton? And as smart a player as Joe Thornton is, you don't want Joe Thornton to be chasing down the two-on-one or the breakaway. And so I think that could be part of the overall calculation that's been sort of underrated in what the Sharks are trying to do here.
Yeah, that's honestly an excellent point. You had a little made me have a little epiphany moment there. I don't know if you saw my head. I was like, wow, I guess that makes the most sense. Like, you have Jumbo with two surgically repaired knees. It's kind of hard for him to chase down, an attacking forward. But I think the boldest prediction right now would be the Sharks to make the playoffs. But that's the only thing that we could really
well,
say.
Well, even that's not so bold because honestly, that fourth playoff spot is wide open.
Yeah, it's competition, really.
Yeah, I think both Minnesota and San Jose will be severely disappointed if they're not in that, you know, in that range at least, you know. Yeah. Like if they're not even close, you know, I think there could be some axes falling in either organization. Personally, I'm not as fond of as Arizona last year. They fooled me for too long. I liked them all last year, and they disappointed me. And LA and Anaheim. Anaheim, I think, is a little bit of a sleeper. I think they're better than people give them credit for. But yeah, I think LA still is a ways away. So that fourth spot is wide open, and the Sharks, with the caliber of even with their many depth questions, with their caliber of star player. That fourth spot, they need to take that. I mean, there's really, like, you know, the competition besides Minnesota is frankly on paper inferior, and so the Sharks need to take that spot. I think the fan base obviously needs it too, because you know, last season left a lot of the fan base with a very bitter taste with all these fat contracts that they still have and whatnot. And so, yeah, so I think that hopefully Doug is right. And there is emergence from some of these young players. Obviously, you're not going to hit on everybody. You know, you're not going to get Leonard, Gregor, you know, all these Chmielewski, Pajnuk, like, not everybody's going to hit. But if you get a couple of these guys to hit, especially Gregor, then we start talking about, okay, you know, like, there is sort of at least the team is trending the right way. And definitely the fan base needs that.
You know, I'm going to have to take you up on that offer, though, about you actually giving us a bold prediction. You always stay middle of the road. You never do, like, a whole lot of bias stuff. Everything's objective. You do a phenomenal job from a journalism perspective. So I'm going to take you up on that offer. I'm going to bring you back on for another interview, another chit chat about essentially how the season's going, maybe in like 10 games in. Maybe we get a third of the way into the season or a quarter of the way into the season to see if we can get a bold prediction out of you.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll see who's popped at that point. I should be able to get a sense at that time. So.
Yeah, definitely. I just want to thank you again for joining me. I know we've had a little bit of technical problems throughout this, but thanks again for joining me. We're on the eve of the Sharks season. It's more work for you. You know, better, I don't want to say better journalism, but better content for the readers. And do you still have that $22.99 promotion going on right now on San Jose Hockey?
Yes, I do. It's going to run out tomorrow. I'm going to close it when the regular season starts. But, you know, I mean, I'm pretty busy tomorrow. I'm not going to shut it down at, 7 p.m. start in Pacific. I'm in Arizona, so I don't know. My times are mixed up. I think it's 6 p.m. I think it's 6 p.m. Pacific tomorrow. I'm not going to shut it down right at the drop of the puck at 6 p.m. So it'll be up tomorrow. Probably even a little bit into the next day until I ask our backend guy to remove it. So anyway, yeah. So it's $22.99, 2 free months, and sign on. A lot of people have signed on. I've been really excited about the response that I've received to the promotion and the tip jar, and just to me being here in Arizona. And so hopefully I can continue to provide interesting coverage for you guys. And the Sharks are themselves interesting this year.
Yeah. So everyone listening to this first thing in the morning on Thursday, the offer is still going to be out there. Take advantage of it. It's phenomenal journalism. That's why we keep bringing him on here, because if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have anything to talk about. So thanks again, Shang. Where can everyone find you on Twitter?
Shang_Peng. And of course, as we mentioned, talked a lot about San Jose Hockey Now. That's where you find my work. And also too, if you guys can help out too, San Jose Hockey Now on Facebook. That's something that I'm trying to get going. And of course, yeah, once again, take a look at my tip jar, and please consider all contributions go to my travel to and from road games. And so thank you.
All right. And you can find myself on Twitter @NickFloor_. You can follow the podcast @StickHungryPod on Twitter. Thanks again, Shang. You have a great rest of your night, and go Sharks, huh?
Thanks, Nick.
Amazing stuff. Love having Shang on the show. I mean, he's just a great connection for us to have. You know, the only Sharks media member that's actually covering the team right now. from training camp. He got himself to Arizona on his own dime. So this guy's just that's an absolute commitment.
He's committed to the Sharks 100%,
organization.
100%. Yeah. I mean, he came over from he was actually a Vegas. In the last interview, we talked about him bouncing from the Vegas organization, but his devotion to his craft is unprecedented. And if you can, if anyone can go to his tip jar and go help him with, you know, covering the expenses of traveling with this team. He said he can't make it to Minnesota. Obviously, he's going to try to go tour the places where he can drive, you know, stick to Arizona, San Jose, Anaheim, LA, possibly Vegas, you know, all centralized in that area. But, you know, just go support him where he's at, San Jose Hockey Now. And I believe he mentioned he still has that promotion going on where I believe it's only $22.99 right now for an entire year's worth of subscription services on San Jose Hockey Now. So.
And it's amazing content. Like, I highly suggest it to anybody that's a San Jose Sharks fan. Yeah, boys, we got the season here. Yep. Like we said, we're all pumped. Just talked to Shang. We're going to try and bring him on more regularly to the show. Maybe every month or so, bring Shang back on the podcast, especially now that there's games being played. He can break down some more of those games and the lineups and where he sees this team going. Before we log off for this week, you guys got anything else you want to say?
Maybe we can have him do a Shang will try it, you know?
Shang will try it. Yeah, I mean, you can bring that up to him. I'm going to stay out of that one.
Yeah. No, I'm just excited to watch hockey, boys. Let's get this puppy going. Let's get this season started, and let's start off on a good note. Let's get this W tonight.
Yeah, let's get this rolling. All right, thanks, everybody, listening to the podcast. We really appreciate it. Guys, let's give a last shout-out to our Twitter handles. You can follow myself at @DYL_THPN. You can follow the show at Stick Hungry Pod. You can follow the network at Hockey Pod Net. Producer T.
At @Producer_TEE.
And Nick.
You find me at @NickFloor_.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We will catch you on Monday.